in which the theme of the program is, what do you suppose this economy is going to look like when the pandemic is all said and done? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, gang, the 11th day of February. Good as always to have you along. I mean, you're curious, right, about what it's going to be like in the economy yet to come? Because it's going to be different whether we're ready or not. So we begin today with two stories on that theme. The news peg for the first of which is our regular Thursday update on the state of the American labor market. Lousy. In a word, another 793,000 Americans lost their jobs last week. Yes, that is down a tad from the week earlier, but still, as I think I say every week now, stratospherically high. And overall, 20-something million people in this economy are getting some kind of government unemployment benefit. So, to the bigger point, which is, of course, the theme of the top half of the program, what it's going to be like when it's done, to find new jobs when this is all over. A lot of people might have to find new careers. The Pew Research Center has some new data out on that. Two-thirds of people who are unemployed have considered going into a new occupation or a new field, while one-third have taken concrete steps to get new training or education. As Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, getting all the cogs in the back-to-work machine turning together, well, that ain't going to be easy.
In normal, not pandemic times, Manny Rodriguez would have about 20 local men and women in the construction pre-apprentice program he runs in West Chicago called Revolution Workshop.
Recruiting from underserved communities, typically we're talking about Black, Brown, and women. I mean, the community desperately needs upskilling and a pathway into family-sustaining careers.
Most of the graduates go into construction jobs paying $18 an hour or more.
But the pandemic happened, and 75% of the folks that we had placed were laid off.
In the spring, summer, and fall, Revolution Workshop didn't start any new cohorts of job trainees because there was no construction work for them. 30-year-old Jeremy Smith of Reno, Nevada, got laid off from his job as a casino valet in March. He took his relief check and some savings and went back to community college.
Was able to graduate with a bachelor's in supply chain management about two semesters early. So ended up kicking me down the road a little quicker than I planned on.
He's looking in his new field, but no luck so far.
I'm sure it'll come roaring back, but it's a little dry right now.
Meanwhile, Manny Rodriguez at Revolution Workshop has a new class of construction pre-apprentices now.
We are currently recruiting for our second cohort. So, you know, if I can put that plug out there, or if you can do that for us, that'd be awesome.
Consider it done. Website at our website. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Got to finish it, Mitchell. It's marketplace.org, just to make sure everybody knows. Okay, story two on the theme of the day is about consumer behavior, what that's going to be like in the after times. Right? We've been talking about the before times. I'm coining a phrase here, the after times. Anyway, specifically shopping, and even more specifically, grocery shopping and consumer behavior. The news peg here is that the grocery store chain Aldi says it's going to open 100 stores in the United States this year, keeping with its big growth plans. And here, maybe, is why. The expansion comes as sales at grocery chains are way up. We are home more, so we are cooking more. But once more people get their shots and more people can get out of the house, is that home cooking trend going to continue, or are we all just itching to get back to restaurants? Marketplace's Mariel Segarra has that one.
When Alex Bianchi does his weekly grocery shopping, he is very aware of how much he's spending, thanks to his phone calculator.
Every time I add something to my cart, I'll add it on the calculator. So that's kind of how I try to keep my spending curbed a little bit.
But Bianchi, who's 23 and lives in North Carolina, used to go to restaurants regularly, and he wasn't going to break out the calculator there. Like, okay, $10 for the appetizer, $20 for the entree.
I don't know, it's a little weird to do that at a restaurant, especially if you go with a friend. They're like, Alex, what are you doing?
It's easy to spend more than you'd like when you're out at a restaurant or a bar. Now that Bianchi is cooking almost all his meals, he's saving about $200 a month. Jillian and J.L. Johnson live in Missouri and used to eat at restaurants a lot. Now they get most of their food at the grocery store.
They save so much money, and so many calories.
They're saving about $1,000 a month, and they've lost a combined 70 pounds. Also, turns out they like cooking together. It's a bonding experience.
We set all the smoke alarms in the house off this week, making our own flour tortillas. It was great. Apparently, it's known that like if you don't set your smoke alarms off, you're not doing it right. So
they expect to go back to restaurants when things open up, just not as much. Chris Stover in California is really missing restaurants. He used to go out with his coworkers near their office in Sacramento for coffee, for lunch.
After work, we had a favorite bar. We would go and get a drink. So like the whole routine, that whole social routine has been disrupted.
And it may not come back. He's working from home, 20 minutes away from the city. And it looks like that's going to be permanent.
I'm like devastated by the fact that I'm going to end up making sandwiches in my kitchen for lunch every day.
One person who thinks he might actually eat out more after the pandemic, Alex Bianchi. He likes saving money, but there are so many restaurants he wants to explore. I'm Mariel Segura for Marketplace.
Is that a thing with the flour tortillas and the smoke detectors? Asking because I'm on the hook for dinner at my house tonight. Just saying. I'm going to go not so very far out on a limb here and say that in the aftertimes, Wall Street is going to keep on Wall Streeting. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Fat Tuesday is next Tuesday, and while Mardi Gras and New Orleans do kind of go hand in hand, what does definitely not go hand in hand with a pandemic is all things big and crowded and celebratory. Parades in New Orleans are canceled, tourism is down, how much more need one say? Quentin Messer Jr. is the president and CEO of the New Orleans Business Alliance with much to say. Mr. Messer, thanks for coming on, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what would be happening now in New Orleans in the before times, in the days pre-pandemic, right about now? What would be going on?
Oh, my gosh. where do I begin? So we are about a week out from Mardi Gras Day. So we probably will be welcoming close to maybe 100,000+ of our closest friends and neighbors from across the world to spend time and for us to love on them and just get ready for an incredible weekend of parades and balls, you name it. Anything that the mind can conceive of fun and merriment, all for free, typically, because it's the biggest free party in the world will be happening in New Orleans.
The catch, of course, is that number one, yeah, it's free, but these people are spending money. And number two, it looked like pandemonium to us, but there's actual serious economic impact going on in New Orleans around Mardi Gras.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. On any given year, you're probably talking anywhere from $700 million to $1 billion of economic impact.
Man,
it's the entire carnival season. Carnival began on January the 6th.
Right. Okay. So that's what happened in the before times in Mardi Gras, and will we all hope happen again, hopefully next year. But right now, it's not. What's the mood along Bourbon Street and the rest of you know the parade routes and party routes in that city?
There's a heaviness because New Orleanians love on people, and the thing about COVID-19, it attacked tactile, intimate socialization. And that's what New Orleanians do, whether it's Mardi Gras or Super Bowl or Jazz Fest. They just love on you. That's why I fell in love with the city. And that energy is still there, but there's a sense of loss. Nearly 800 New Orleanians lost their lives to COVID. So there are very few people in New Orleans who were not touched. But the one thing about New Orleanians, you don't bet against us because we'll get through.
Yeah, that's the other thing you hear about New Orleans and New Orleanians, right, is resilience. You come back from hurricanes, you come back from a whole bunch of stuff, but you kind of, y'all are always there.
Yes. I mean, we are never going to retreat in the face of disaster or disappointment. You have hundreds, probably thousands of folks who have decorated their homes. They have house floats. So you can literally get a map online. Yeah. You can drive around New Orleans and see these houses. So a pandemic will never stop the New Orleanian spirit of creativity and innovation.
Have you had, though, Mr. Messer, members of your business alliance come to you and say, you know what, Quentin, I can't do this anymore. I got to shut it down, or I got to turn my business into something else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And more than likely, you've had people sort of fade away. I mean, we went through this kind of in cycles. We thought by the summer we would be able to come back. And then you thought, okay, by Thanksgiving. Yeah. It's a slow motion tragedy economically, and it does have a significant psychological impact. But the good news is a lot of businesses made difficult decisions early and saved cash. So they're now in a position to make it and reopen. And so if you are going to travel, we have figured out how to do it in a responsible way so that you don't go back and become a super spreader wherever your home is.
That's the president and CEO of the New Orleans Business Alliance. His name is Quentin Messer. Mr. Messer, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, sir.
There's some business of fashion news this week. Rihanna's line, Fenty, it's called, is taking a pause just 2 years after being launched by LVMH, the world's biggest luxury goods conglomerate. While the pandemic surely contributed to Fenty's demise, Marketplace's Erica Barris reminds us that even in regular times, it can be tricky to get a luxury fashion brand going.
With Fenty, Rihanna was the first Black woman to start a fashion house at LVMH. She'd already had success with her lingerie and makeup lines there. But Jeff Gallick, a marketing professor at Carnegie Mellon, says a new high-end fashion line, totally different.
That is a place where legacy has so much to do with what's considered high quality, what's considered popular. It's that legacy that people are drawn to, basically what Fenty did. You're fighting an uphill battle to begin with.
Fenty is essentially a startup within an established brand, says Tamai Sidari, a professor at NYU. And for a startup to be successful, it needs three things.
One is to have product that is really well differentiated so that the brand equity increases pretty quickly.
So, something no one else offers. Second, it needs to know its customers. And third, have the right pricing strategy. Letitia Brown, professor of business management at the Fashion Institute of Technology, says Fenty's core customer base, younger with less discretionary income and maybe not so willing to drop half a grand on a fleece dress.
As opposed to putting their money into something where they can still get that brand recognition, but at a better price point. So like your beauty or your lingerie, or maybe even a shoe or a sunglass.
But even Fenty sunglasses or strappy stilettos don't really have much of a place in the pandemic. Susan Scafidi is with the Fashion Law Institute at Fordham University.
Fashion has been really on pause throughout the pandemic. And I think that that's a part of the reason why it would make sense for LVMH and Fendi to decide to pause.
Until, in the company's words, quote, pending better conditions. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
You wake up tomorrow morning, you get your coffee or your tea or whatever, and you're wondering what's going on in business and economics. Might I recommend David Brancaccio? And a little radio show he does called The Marketplace Morning Report. Check it out. Coming up.
They used to say there's a nap for that. Well, you do something in life and there's a stat for that.
Not a bad slogan, actually. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials didn't do much today, down 7 points. The blue chips closed at 31,430. The NASDAQ found 53 points, about 0.3%, 14,025. S&P 500 rounded up 6 points. That's about 0.1%, 39.16. Talking about grocery store sales earlier, here you go. Kroger down just under 0.1%. Sprout Farmers Market. Sprout or Sprouts? I think it's Sprouts. Dipped 0.6%. Grocery Outlet down 0.3%. On the restaurant scene, the parents of Popeyes and Burger King Restaurant Brands International reported lower sales than expected, shares down 1.5% today. COVID restrictions on restaurants and bars hurt beer brewer, that's in air quotes, Molson Coors in its last quarter, missed the consensus on earnings and went flat, dropped more than 9% on Wall Street. Today, you're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. One of the things about some workplaces in this pandemic is that some of them bring with them some peril. There's some risk. President Biden's done a couple of things to try to manage that risk. He's ordered government agencies to strengthen workplace safety rules and that it be made clear that workers who won't work because they feel unsafe should qualify for unemployment benefits. Until now, that has been less than clear. From the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino reports.
Crystal Clifton had been working at a restaurant in a small town in rural Virginia, on and off for the past decade or so. But when the pandemic hit, the work suddenly became risky.
And I was just afraid to have that close contact because it wouldn't be no way to put yourself 6 foot apart. With my circumstances, if I get it, I might be one of them that didn't make it.
Clifton has chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, high blood pressure, and a heart condition. All put her at increased risk from COVID-19, and she says not many people are wearing masks in her town. In May, her boss asked her to return to work after the initial lockdown ended.
And I told her I was still afraid to right now.
Clifton's employer notified the state she had voluntarily quit, which stripped her of the unemployment benefits she had been getting since March. She and her boyfriend are now getting by on his disability check and food stamps. She says she's been unable to pay for medical expenses, her car loan, or utility bills, and she worries her heat will soon be turned off.
We're like 20-some degrees right now, it's snowing. A lot of hardship. You know, it's hard to make it with no money.
Clifton has been getting help appealing her unemployment claim from attorney Pat Levy-Lavelle at the Legal Aid Justice Center in Virginia. He believes Clifton should qualify for benefits, but her claim that she refused work for safety reasons hasn't been evaluated yet.
So in Virginia, when somebody refuses work, the state agency looks on a case-by-case basis as to why the job refusal happened. And as with many states, is months and months behind on case processing.
The lack of clear federal guidance on this issue has led to a patchwork of different standards from state to state and case to case that has left workers not knowing where they stand, says Andrew Stettner of the Century Foundation.
People were really kind of put in a it's your money or your life situation. Well, they could refuse to go back to work, but they had no guidance about it.
He says there's been a spike in unemployment claims being denied because the applicant was deemed to have quit or refused work.
This has been perhaps the most common reason that people have been denied unemployment benefits during this period.
But the numbers are all over the map. Stettner's analysis of federal data found Nebraska, for instance, denied about 30 times more of these unemployment cases than California between March and December, even though its population is about 20 times smaller. New federal guidance won't completely erase those differences, but it could send a powerful signal to workers who otherwise wouldn't know their rights. Mazahir Saleh directs the Center for Worker Justice of Eastern Iowa, which assists low-wage essential workers.
People will trust the president. If the president say the sun tomorrow, they will say, yeah.
She says Biden's message about workplace safety could give more workers confidence to speak out. To qualify for unemployment, workers will need to offer some proof of safety concerns. Crystal Clifton in Virginia hopes it will help her finally get some answers about her unemployment claim.
Even though you don't sleep a lot because everything's on your mind, it's like a nightmare you can't wake up from.
It's been 8 months since she's received an unemployment payment. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
You read the business and economic news, or preferably listen to it, yes, and you come to understand the importance of data, statistics, the measurements that tell us what's going on in this economy. There are about a dozen agencies, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the Census Bureau, and the National Center for Education Statistics, and a whole bunch of perhaps lesser-known brands that are the backbone of the federal government's data infrastructure. And they are, it seems, in some need right now. Robert Santos is the president of the American Statistical Association. Mr. Santos, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, in the category of you learn something new every day on this job, I had not previously given a lot of thought to our data infrastructure, our statistical infrastructure in this economy. What would you say is the current state of it?
Basically, a state of need. It needs attention. It needs bolstering. It has been threatened over the last decade or so, and more keenly over the last 4 years, by different events that have to do with underfunding, as well as an effort over the past administration to shrink government.
I'm going to ask you to give me an example, and I want you to tell me what happened with the Economic Research Service, which is part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, because they seem to be a pretty glaring example of the current state of play.
A couple of things basically happened to it. The first was that there was a decision to move its headquarters from Washington, D.C. to Kansas City for the purpose, honorable purpose, of being closer to its constituency and its stakeholders of the farming community, the food mm-hmm. community. However, the ERS had been built up over decades and decades in Washington, D.C. headquarters. And so you had a situation where a huge proportion, over half of the staff left. And what that did is that made the usual functioning of ERS, which puts out some really great data that allow policymakers to do things like figure out what's the appropriate food stamp benefit or things of that sort. And they're in a situation where they were underfunded and basically gutted.
With the understanding that there are many parts of this government that are in dire need of more money to do their assigned tasks, is this something that the Biden administration can just throw money at and fix?
I wish it were that simple, because the administration does not control the budget strings. It helps very much to have the executive branch be in favor of bolstering the federal statistical system. But we also need the cooperation of the Congress. And we and stakeholders are doing everything we can to inform them of the threats that currently exist to our federal statistical data infrastructure so that we can better serve our U.S. society.
Let me ask you to get a little bit more specific about that last part. If I am going about my daily life, whether it's here in Los Angeles or Ottumwa or Atlanta or anywhere, why does this matter for me?
Well, I mean, I can tell you from a personal experience just today. So this morning, I needed to go to the grocery store. I went out, got in my car, and guess what? There was construction. They're widening the lanes. Well, the reason they're doing that is because the Department of Transportation has something called the National Household Travel Survey. Hmm. No matter where you go or what you do, there's a survey out there. There's a stat there. Just like, you know, how they used to say, we have an app for that. Well, you do something in life and there's a stat for that. And it typically comes from the federal statistical system.
Fair, Fair enough. Robert Santos, he is the head of the American Statistical Association. He's the president there. He's also at the Urban Institute. Mr. Santos, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
This final note on the way out today, one more item in the, the economy is going to be different in the after times. After all, a company named Bumble started trading on Wall Street today. It's a dating app in which women are the ones who are allowed to make the first move. Shares up 72% on its first day of trading, which helped make founder and CEO Whitney Wolf Herd one of the unfortunately rare self-made female billionaires in this economy. All right, we are out of here, but not without your Thursday moment of economic context. Comes to us not for the first time in the last 10 days or so from the Congressional Budget Office, which was out this morning with its budget and economic outlook for the next 10 years. Bottom line, there's a whole lot of red ink in this thing. Budget deficit is going to be $2.3 trillion this year. Remember, that's the annual difference between what the government takes in and what it pays out. The average deficit through 2031, $1.2 trillion. That is every single year. Now, are those big numbers? Yes. Are most economists worried right now? No. Interest rates are super low and better to spend now than to have a depression later. Amir Bibawi, Siobhan Brett, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Kat Green, Rick Carr, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is 8 p.m.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.